Good morning. I'd like to welcome you all to the Carson City Board of Equalization on Tuesday, February 28, 2017, at I think it's about 9:01 a.m. Item A, call to order and determination of quorum.
Chairperson Block.
Here.
Member McFadden.
Here.
Member Rasner.
Here.
Member Simmons.
Here.
Member Wilson.
Here.
A quorum's present.
Great, thank you. On to item B, public comment. The public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of the Carson City Board of Equalization. Anything that's not on the agenda, and we see no public, so on to item C for possible action. Review and approval of minutes, February 14, 2017. Has everybody had time to review the minutes? I'd like to...
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of February 14th meeting.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we hear a second? Corrections?
I actually have a correction. On page three, I had noted that the mover for the motion regarding APN 00753105, the mover was actually, I believe, Member Simmons. On page three at the bottom. So because I amended it,
yes.
I was a mover? Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, if you read the paragraph, it says you're negative.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that made a difference.
No.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Now on to, well, I guess we need to, at this point, have you swear in people that are going to testify. Okay, so we're on to item D, and I don't know if that changes. I guess I'll read the item in Mr. Serpa's later information. Sierra Clouds is not to be in here, or could you just proceed?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make a statement before. Well, first of all, I just wanted to make sure that everybody had an opportunity to read the late material that was submitted by the appellant. Okay, so we don't have to take time out to read that. And then the other thing is that there was a question that was posed to my office with regard to the definition of common ownership and contiguous parcels. And we did a lot of research, and there's nothing on point. However, the legislature did give all of the county Board of Equalizations and ultimately the State Board of Equalization the jurisdiction to hear these appeals and to determine what constitutes common ownership based on the evidence that you hear. So it will be up to you to determine if you think something constitutes common ownership and whether or not it's contiguous parcels, and you will make that determination based on all the evidence. And then if it's appealed by anyone, then the State Board of Equalization will then take all of that into consideration and determine whether or not it constitutes common ownership or contiguous parcels. So you are it. You're the deciders, and you decide based on the evidence whether or not something is common ownership.
Okay, great. So if I blow this, please help me along. So item D for possible action, petition for review of taxable valuation of John Serpa, Sierra Clouds LLC, various locations, APNs 008-531-34, 008-531-35, 00853149, 00853150, 00853151, 00853152, 00853154, 00854138, 00541-39, 00854139, 00854140, 00854143, 00854159, 00854160, 00854161, 00854162, 00854177, 00854178, and 00854191. That was a mouthful. So what we're going to do today is we'll have the appellant come up and state their case, and then we'll have the assessor give us their information, and we'll go back to commissioner questions of the assessor and the appellant, and then the appellant will have the opportunity to rebut what the assessor does, and then the assessor will have the same opportunity at the end. So either one of you gentlemen like to step forward and please state your name for the record and tell us what's going on.
John Serpa, Sr. I tried to just make it as short as possible. The biggest question was, which I believe you were just referring to, is common ownership on the package, you have a page in here that basically everything on this page except for the shotgun range and a piece of BLM property we acquired in 1983. In difference, estate work that I've done, I've moved properties to different LLCs for different ideas for development. And long and short of it is, when you take away the 100 acres golf course, which got donated to the city, and the property down at the airport, the bottom that's yellow, that FAA took for the Carson City Airport in the last 40 years. It's always been in the family. I believe you have a statement from Scott Heaton, who's been a family attorney for over 30 years, that all these properties stayed in the Serpa family, only moved around for estate purposes. The total sales, like I say, is about 50 acres of the 400. If you take away the golf and Carson Airport, it comes down to somewhere around 200 acres. So approximately 25% of the property in the last 34 years has been able to be sold. So our understanding is it's still common ownership. You don't change it just because someone died or gifts it to their other family. That was the biggest concern we had, and that's what the assessor's office said, that they wanted you to hear to see if the subdivision discount would be in effect. The only other point is that we're asking that there were 46 acres taken by FDIC when the bank failed and they would not renew the loan. Those properties have the premium of being able to go what they call through the fence, which is you can go from your private property to the runways. They probably, for the pricing in the past, were priced higher than the other ones. So we're asking that the evaluation for the 46 acres that was taken, which is in somewhere in the value of $32,000 an acre, and ours is at $67,000 an acre. Pardon? Yeah. And I crossed off the up in the corner. That's a piece of landlocked loan land for right now. So the bottom line is that our land is average twice the price of the green stuff. And that's about the only comparable that there is. The assessor has identified some comp sales which are up by the state buildings. It used to be Harley, then the state has them. He has a comp of up there of his unimproved property, and that has hundreds of thousands of dollars already done to it. It has the building pads in place, the parking in place, the utilities to all four of the four building pads. So it definitely not a comparable. The other sale he has is a piece of property that the same family has changed it three times. I have no idea why they keep changing the price, but it's not an arm's length transaction. I think that's it.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for that.
Mr. Chairman, before we go on to staff, if Mr. Serpa could clarify in his letter, he talks about, I believe that there's 18 parcels that are being appealed in Book 8, which are owned by Sierra Clouds, LLC. And I'm not...
My son is not involved in the family anymore, so I did not get a chance to get his approval to do that. We removed those.
So that needs to be clarified before you make your determination.
That's in the letter that I sent.
Right, as to whether or not, number one, if that was appealed, if it was appealed by the proper person, and then second of all, whether or not that should be considered as part of your determination in determining whether or not the subdivision discount applies, et cetera.
There are two different locations. One's over by the Carson River, and this is over by the golf course. Totally different. And the list that I included, I just used the list that the assessor's office gave me of the SERP, they call SERPA properties.
Okay.
And like I said, in the letter, I did not get approval.
Okay. As long as the board is clear on which properties are not part of the appeal and which are. As long as you're all clear with that, then record is clear.
So this item D.
Just the property on this map.
So the APNs on item D here, are they all owned by Sierra Clouds LLC?
Mr. Chairman, because of the number of parcels and because of the different locations of the properties, then we broke them down into separate agenda items. Okay. And so item number D is the Sierra Cloud LLC property, which is owned by Mr. John Serpa Jr. Those are all along Deer Run Road. The properties that Mr. Serpa Sr. is talking about is the properties along the airport, and they're in Book 5, and they are actually the next agenda item. So we're asking you to make a determination whether anything should be done with item D.
Okay, so we need to have a motion whether we're going to continue this on because Mr. Serpa Jr. is not here,
right,
and Mr. Serpa is not in the capacity or to be able to go over this. So, okay, so I'd like to entertain a motion. Does that make sense to everybody in what he's done for item D? So would someone like to make a motion? I guess we really can't. There's no one here to represent Mr. Serpa Jr.
Correct. The appeal was actually made by.
It was
senior.
Made by me.
So
okay. I just took the assessor's list and applied that to the application. As the assessor's office and I have been trying to settle this without going to the hearing, and
so there's
they said they needed the board's decision on the subdivision discount.
So there's two ways of doing this. You could either
There's
two ways of doing this. You could either withdraw your appeal or you could dismiss the appeal based on lack of jurisdiction because
the appeal itself, well,
we basically withdrew the Sierra Clouds parcels from that appeal.
Right, so it's just a partial withdrawal, not an entire withdrawal.
Correct.
It includes the Book 5 parcels as well.
So okay. Parcels would
Which is agenda item D, correct?
So agenda item D, you would dismiss those parcels that you read into the record.
Okay, so
he would withdraw the the appeal.
We withdraw the appeal based on the Sierra Clouds properties.
Yes, which
what
is
he was referring to was just the Arrowhead properties on the airport.
Right, which is the next agenda item. So we could, right, so they're separate on here. So, Mr. Serpa, if you would just state for the record that you would like to withdraw item D, which is the Sierra Cloud Properties, from this. Now, with them doing that, do they have a way to appeal to the state board, or is it just we have to wait till next year, till the next appeal? Okay.
No, they didn't. The proper owner didn't even appeal this.
Okay.
So, I'd like to remove the Sierra Clouds parcels and there's one other one.
W and S and Sierra Clouds need to be removed
We'll cover that one the next agenda item, but if we can just do this for item D, removing Sierra Clouds, then we'll move out. So you're wanting to withdraw item D, which has all the properties to do with Sierra Clouds LLC. Is that correct?
I'm not familiar when you say B, but I think we all understand D. It's the Sierra Clouds and the W and S.
Right, okay, WNS is on item E, so we're on item D, which is the Sierra Cloud, so.
Mr. Chairman, if also the W and S investments, the parcel number is 5-051-24, so if we could just consolidate and authorize to remove that parcel now.
So that's
005-051-24.
Okay. So what I'm hearing, Mr. Serpa, saying that he's withdrawing the appeal for all of the properties on item agenda item D, which are the properties owned by Sierra Clouds LLC, John Serpa Jr., and also removing the W&S Investments LLC APN 005-051-24.
That's correct.
Okay, great. So.
Okay, I'm going to complicate this. So.
Well, naturally.
When we get to the agenda item, so you guys will make them, or he's withdrawing D.
Right.
When when we open up agenda item E,
uh-huh.
He'll just say that he's withdrawing 005-051-24.
Okay. That's
right. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks.
So we're on item D, thanks. Okay, so that's good. So now we can just move on to item E.
There we go.
Okay. So for possible action, petition for review of taxable valuation of Tahoe 4 LLC, JS Development Company, JS DeVico Limited Partnership, W&S Investments LLC, Caliber Jack LLC, various locations, APN 005-051-03, 005-051-04, 005-051-05, 005-051-09, 005-051-16, 005-051-22, 005-051-23, 005-051-24, 005-051-26, 005-051-27, 005-05401, 005-05403. Okay, 005-054-04, 005-054-08, and 005-054-11. Okay, so with that item, it's Mr. Serpa's intention to remove the parcel that's owned by W&S Investments LLC, APN 005-051-24, from this action item.
Correct?
Okay, great. So let me cross that out so I don't get too confused here. And so basically what you've already talked to us about are the items that are under Tahoe 4, JNS, JS Development, JS DeVico, and Caliber Jack, correct?
DevCo.
I don't know why I'm having a problem with that one, but.
Tahoe 4,
yes. Okay, so would you like to comment any further on what you've already
said? Fine.
Okay, Mr. Assessor, you're up.
Good morning, members of the board. Denise Gillette with the Carson City Assessor's Office.
And what I had done, what we had spoken about sooner is that this was all one appeal. We divided it up into two appeal packets for the purpose of clarity. And so what this item is covering are the 14 parcels in Book 5. And what it comes down to is Mr. Serpa feels that he is entitled to a subdivision discount for these parcels. And typically, if you look at the maps, he does have over 10 parcels on this page. What we have to take into consideration, and we are looking to you for guidance for this, is to determine, one, if these parcels are considered contiguous. If you look in NAC, let's see, I'm going to give you a page number. It is page 16. If you look at NAC 361129, it defines contiguous for you, and it also defines common ownership. So you think that everything's fairly clear cut. But if you go down a little bit further and continue reading, the NAC becomes a little gray. And so what we did is we spoke with the state to determine whether or not these Book 5 parcels did in fact qualify. The state came to the conclusion that they did not qualify. But I'm not sure you can see a lot of the correspondence going back and forth, the state was very hesitant to put anything in writing to support this. And so that kind of left us a little bit of in a situation to fully determine whether or not we had anything to stand on to remove these discounts. We went further, we called the other counties, we tried to figure out kind of how everyone else in the state was handling this, and we came to the conclusion that they did not qualify. However, I'm reading the same statute that you're all reading, and our hands are tied. What we have determined is that these parcels do qualify for discounts that were given to them in prior years at Board of Equalization, which technically we only have to withhold for a year, but due to the topography and maybe the parcel was landlocked or the fact that maybe it's not quite as buildable as some of the surrounding parcels, we continued with that discount. And if you look at it is page 42, you can see the types of discounts that we're providing for these parcels currently. A lot of them are receiving a 50% discount. We have one receiving a 40%, some receiving a 25% discount. This was all due to topography and buildability, and our intent is to continue with those discounts until the time that these situations are rectified. So what we're doing is now we're determining whether or not the subdivision discount should be provided. That's fine. We have determined that we are willing to provide a 30% subdivision discount if you deem that these parcels qualify through common ownership and through being considered contiguous. That discount will go on top of the current discounts being provided. So if you look at 005-051-03, it's currently receiving a 50% discount for topography and buildability. That subdivision discount would go on top of that 50%. So I want you to keep that in mind when you're making your decision. Honestly, we just want guidance on this. We want to make sure it's correct. We have no ownership in this decision. And so we've talked with Mr. Serpa on multiple occasions, and I believe he spoke with the state as well, and we're just trying to come to some form of a conclusion for this. The issue is, if you look at, I believe it's my Exhibit B, it breaks down all of the owners and officers on these corporations. So what it comes down to is, yes, all of these parcels are held by four different entities with different members or different officers within the corporation. So what I ask that you take into consideration is that they did provide an affidavit, like he stated, from Mr. Heaton, their attorney, and it goes into some discussion. We did ask for operating agreements, and this is what was provided, but it lays it out. So at the end of the day, it's up to you to determine whether this provides enough support to declare that they have common ownership within these Book 5 parcels.
Can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
So since we removed 24, won't that make it unequal for that portion as well?
You just have to have 10 with common contiguous common ownership parcels. And so removing that one does not disqualify them from the requirement of having 10 parcels.
Shouldn't they also receive it?
That is an improved parcel, the reason why we included it with the original appeal and through conversations is because our policy is, and is supported by the NAC statute, is that Silver Oak, if they build 10 houses and they have not sold, those parcels will still receive the subdivision discount until the time that ownership is transferred. So once someone purchases that home, that's when we remove that subdivision discount because it's no longer owned by the developer. So in determining common ownership, it's still technically, even though it was developed, has not changed hands. So again, what you all have to decide is whether or not the inconsistency within the corporations, the LLCs, and the partnerships support common ownership or not.
Let me ask you this question. What page is you're showing the beneficial ownership that you just talked about? Exhibit E? There's only a few pages here.
The affidavit is on page 57, and the Secretary of State support is on starts on page 23. And also, we're entering in some new evidence. It's just additional emails that we've had. I had the email chain and correspondence chain that we've had ongoing, and so we've had some additional correspondence. So we're just including that into the record, if that's okay.
Okay, great. I've got some confusion the Secretary of State's office. Tahoe 4 LLC, the manager is DGD Development General Partnership, and so we have no information on the general partnership and who are the general partners of that.
That's my company.
That's your company?
Correct.
Okay, we don't have anything here. JS Development Company.
You can just
state
on the record.
Okay. Keith, please say your name.
Yeah, DGD Development is my company. Keith Serpa.
Okay, and then JS Development Company, is that listed with the Secretary of State's office? I couldn't find that the other day.
It is. It's myself and my father.
That's on page 25 is where JS DevCo Limited Partnership.
Now I'm talking about JS Development Company.
That's JS DevCo.
That's JS DevCo.
Same thing.
Okay. Okay, I got you. I'm there.
Correct, there was. I purchased it.
So if you look on my page 23 for the first corporation or the first LLC, there's a contradiction because in my evidence it shows John Serpa as the owner, but that was a recent change after the appeal was filed.
The Secretary of State's office on your printout does not show beneficial ownership. It's a manager.
Right. And
a manager.
The officers, yeah.
That's all we can get.
That's all we can get, but it doesn't show beneficial ownership because a manager can be an employee hired by the members to do that. The manager is just running the day-to-day affairs, so we can't really tell from what we see with the Secretary of State's office beneficial ownership on that. It might be implied, but that always gets us in trouble. So let's see. And same with Caliper Jack. Keith, you show as the manager, and also Tahoe 3 LLC, you're the manager as well, but it's still not telling us who the members of the LLC are.
Okay.
And so that's where it gets really confusing to try to separate the property. Mr. Serpa, would you like to?
The letter from Scott Eaton identifies that all these were created by him, and they're all Serpa.
It's all family.
Okay, so just... So we have a clear record, if there are any appeals,
right,
we have to submit the recording of this meeting to the to you for your appeal and also to the Board of Equalization for the state. So you want to have a clear record of who's speaking. So if you come up and just, talk on the record. And so he's talking about page 58
which is the affidavit. And if you look at paragraph 8, it talks about the actual owners and preparing affidavits.
We could probably shortcut this process in that the letter that I sent says third paragraph in the packet that you guys received.
The late information yesterday?
Correct.
Okay.
Even with the subdivision discount, these properties are valued almost double what the parcel is in the green on the map, which to me is the same. It's the same caliber of property.
Okay.
So even with the subdivision discount, this the average of our properties on the airport they're averaged at $63,115 per acre. The green parcel there on the map is valued at $36,492. I mean, roughly double. So subdivision discounts aside, ownership aside, equalization, the properties are the same.
Okay.
And they're one's being valued at half. That might shortcut the whole ownership deal.
Okay. Just any other questions of the appellant? Any more information that you would like to share with us, Mr. Zerba?
I think my father covered it. It's been in the family since 83. It's kind of a no-brainer to us.
Okay. Back to the assessor.
Denise Gillott with the assessor's office. He is correct with those parcels that he's speaking to being much lower than the surrounding parcels. And what I'd like to do is kind of give you kind of a history on these parcels and what our office, our current policy and what we do is, if we look at what we're doing is we're equalizing all of the commercial and industrial in Carson City. I know that you all are well aware that the three of us as appraisers are fairly new to the office. We came in and we're kind of cleaning house. And so what our policy has been in the past is when we find a mistake that has been made, we don't immediately completely correct it the very next year because that will cause a large increase in value. So when it's been a mistake made by our office, what we do is we do a tiered
adjustment.
A tiered adjustment over years so that it doesn't affect any one taxpayer all at once. We've not only done that with Mr. Serpa's properties and all of these LLC and partnerships debating ownership, but we've also done that with multiple other parcels, and I know you've heard as the board a few of our cases and in fact recommended that we continue with that process. So that's what we have done. And so what it is, and so he's correct with those two parcels, and every year since we've been starting this equalization within the commercials, they've had tremendous increase every year. And we've done the same thing for their parcels as well. And what the mistake was is years ago when the subdivision discount was granted to them and the additional discounts for build, when they came to the Board of Equalization, I believe it was in 13-14, what we found out is that every year, the land values, they were keeping the discounts, which was fine, but they were not increasing the land values to equalize with the surrounding parcels. So they were not using market value. They were just keeping all of these parcels on Book 5 at the same price per square foot value and still giving the discount. And so what it in turn happened is all of these parcels were severely undervalued. All of them were. And so even though when we began this process, they were still owned, all of these parcels, even the two that they're speaking of, were owned by this still within these four entities. And so since then it's changed, but we've continued with the same process of slowly equalizing and getting these parcels back up to market value. The market value is between $2.25 and $2.50 per square foot for this area. We will have all these parcels at market value within the next couple of years. We've just done it on a slower basis, and right or wrong, you can also advise us on that. You know, we've always done it to be conservative for the taxpayer, but in situations like this, I can see where it's not consistent. It doesn't every year equalize the parcels to the same value, but we did give them the same benefit And these two parcels, even though they've changed ownership, we did not just completely, you know, go all the way up to market value. We are doing it on a tiered basis. And so if you recommend that that is not the correct way to handle it, we will correct our policy on that, and we will make sure that it's not done that way in the future.
So the information in green on this map, is that what you're talking about? That's under value?
Yes, and he's correct. And their parcels were as well. So we are making the adjustments to make sure we're bringing these up. They were just severely undervalued, all of them, for many years.
Is there a reason that we haven't gone up on the $36,000 parcels?
The green parcels.
The green parcels?
They have been increased for the last 3 years. Yeah, that's how undervalued they were. I believe this year we did 150% increase this year.
Okay.
Right. And there will be another. There will be another 150% increase next year to get them where they need to be.
But we don't see any comparable sales up there to support that value. I mean, on any of this. As my father stated, he dedicated the property to the golf course. FAA bought the airport land. The only other sale up there was us to the airport when they did an expansion.
Correct. We utilize comps, though, outside of your parcel map. We do an entire market area study, and so there, even though they may not be located on that map, there have been sales and to support our value. And that is on page 60 of the packet.
I don't have your whole packet here in front of me, sorry. How long has the green parcel been undervalued, all the parcels around the green parcel is no longer owned by us. Everything else around it basically is. And for whatever reason, I mean, it just doesn't seem equal. Even now, if you guys are raising those up, why wouldn't ours be at least brought down similar to theirs? We've been overpaying for quite some time, and these folks have been underpaying. And it's kind of an equalization thing. That's kind of where we're here, right?
Well, certainly. And Denise, let me ask you this question. Does law prohibit you from going up to the fair market value assessed and then gradually increase the tax that they pay? I mean, it seems like it gets confusing because if they're valued at $150,000 now, but the real value should be $300,000 instead of going from $150,000 to $200,000 to $250,000 to $300,000. Is that based on what the legislature restricts you on doing?
No, sir. I mean, the property taxes are capped, whether it's residential or commercial, and so they would just fall under the certain cap. But a 300% increase in 1 year for us was just a little too dramatic. And so, I mean, if you decide you don't want us to, or you want us to do that, we would be more than happy to do that. It's totally up to you.
Okay, so based on, you know, what we're looking at here is regardless if they've been undervalued, if we value them at what the fair market value is now, the cap is still going to come into play, that their cost of the taxes that they're going to have to pay are going to go up 8% as long as it's commercial.
That's correct, sir. And Mr. Serpa did bring up, an issue, and that's the Nevada legislature. Sorry, I shouldn't call that an issue. But, the Nevada legislature can go in and do whatever they want to do. So if they get rid of the property tax cap, then anybody's property taxes would be based on any imaginable situation or scenario. I mean, they could get rid of the cap completely, and then everything would be based on the actual value of the property. And so there could be a huge increase in 1 year, and it all really just depends on what the legislature does.
My feeling is, being that the cap's in place, and you're right, there's always uncertainty with the legislature and the 17 freshmen again this session, that they could change the property cap tax value. But I think it would be easier for us to have them all valued at fair market value at this point in time. Yeah, it's going to increase a big tax burden for them, but it almost seems that the SERPA family organization would have a better idea that they know that they're being treated fairly, whether they like their taxes going up or not.
Right.
But it's just if we made a motion, the board made a motion to value all these at fair market value at this point in time, appealing that for the green properties would come again next year to the Board of Equalization and the SERPAs perhaps too. But we could also direct you in doing that so it would take effect in the next fiscal year.
Mr. Chairman, we cannot increase the values of those green parcels because we did not notice the owners. And so they would be able. They would have to be able to be here to discuss that issue.
That would be next year that they could.
So the issue, what we could do is we could lower Mr. Serpa's properties to that value for this year, and then we would just increase everything to market value for next year, if that's how you want to equalize everything.
Okay. Does that make sense to everybody? Pretty much. Have any more questions? You know, it's getting to that point. You're going to have a motion. But, Keith, would you like to comment?
Does that include the sub? Is that before the subdivision discount or after? I guess that's the next question. If we're doing this by the book.
Denise Gillette, they're completely separate issues. So if you want to, what will happen is if you lower the market values to reflect those two parcels and not take into consideration overall market value, that would be lowered. They would still receive their discount based on topography and buildability. And then on top of it, you'd then decide if they qualified for the subdivision discount. So, I mean, that's
three separate issues.
Yeah.
Correct.
So we're talking about equalizing the properties for this year until everything can be reassessed for fair market value. Also, applying to give guidance whether we're going to apply the subdivision rule of up to, what is it, 9 parcels or something that's under NAC 361-129, I think is what it was. And so what would the third one be, the beneficial ownership? Or we need to determine if we want to equalize the valuation for this year. We need to determine if the subdivision rule applies because of basically what's said here in Mr. Heaton's affidavit to do that, and to apply any further discounts for the property. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Is that three separate motions?
We probably need to make that in one motion. Under this, or could we make 3 motions?
I would say 3 just because they are 3 separate issues. If you equalize us to the green parcels, that's at least the equalization part is handled, and then the subdivision and the other topographical stuff is completely separate, I would say. But it's not
okay. Cool. Sound reasonable?
Definitely cleaner, yeah. What exactly are you asking for? I mean, are you asking for all of that, or do you want?
We're just pointing out our disagreement with the value. You know, if you brought us to the equalization thing, I guess that's a good start. But like they said, they're going to just start bringing it back up 150% a year. So we'd ask for some sort of consideration on the other.
The other thing that we need to consider, board, that the green part probably is undervalued, but we have to look at the comps. That what is this really worth? You know, this might be undervalued, but we have a comp. We have to look at the comps as well.
Right. And I also, I think that we need to go through, you know, our steps and really, you know, make go through each of these and say, you know, this is why I think whatever. So I think that it's important to point out that, I mean, the whole purpose of an LLC is to shield, I mean, the reason why these are all owned under separate LLCs is to shield, you know, each from liability. So I feel like you're kind of trying to get, you know, the best of both worlds kind of thing.
Right.
That you're shielded from liability, but then you're trying to, you know, get the tax discount.
I got you.
Yeah.
I guess you just have to weigh out that, you know, how the affidavit from our attorney and see if that's, you know.
Right. And they talk about, you know, and I don't think that, I'm sure Ross Miller tried to get that done when he was Secretary of State, but it doesn't really state that, you know, lineal ownership is one person or entity, because I'm pretty certain the IRS wouldn't look at it that way.
I got you. And they're separate tax returns.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're separate tax returns, whether you're filing a 1025, the partnership, subchapter S,
right.
C Corp, things like that, 1065, 1120, or 1120S. So that all makes it very confusing, but it's how it works when you're trying to protect your assets.
I got you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So if you're going to make a motion to determine whether or not he's eligible for the subdivision discount, then you will have to make that determination and make the findings as to whether or not there is common ownership. And again, you look at the affidavit from the attorney that said, you know, they're all owned by family members. I have family members that are willing to sign affidavits if you want. I think that's paragraph 8. And based on the testimony of the history of ownership, all of that. But you need to make that on the record so that it's clear. That's probably the number one step that you have to make before you even make the motion on the discount for the subdivision. That NAC has a whole laundry list of everything that has to be met, but I think the assessor's office has the findings for most of it. Now it's down to the ownership question.
Right, and at this point, it's go ahead, Dave.
Mr. Chairman, just for clarification, if I could direct you to page 42. Those are currently the discounts that the properties are receiving because either topography, buildability, they're landlocked. So they range anywhere from a 20% all the way up to a current 50% of value. Parcel number 5-051-26 and 27, currently on at 5 cents a foot. So, I mean, that's substantially lower than what they're asking. So I'm not sure how we want to do this.
I have a comment. I mean, I just want to, you know, sort of reiterate that the comps are showing an average price per square foot of $394. So looking at that range, I mean, I you're still, you know, $1.50 plus under market value, even at what they're valued at now, before the discounts.
I think my father has a question.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Serpa.
When they refer to the discounts they've given, there's a discounts for, there's no road to these properties. The airport is piled rocks along here, so there's no way to build at this particular point in time. That property is landlocked. Even after the discounts they're talking about for these problem properties that they call not accessible and non-buildable, their value is still 60-some-odd thousand. I thought somebody made a motion or whatever that we would clear it up
with the
and
equalization part.
Put our properties at the same average per acre as the other properties, which are the only other properties in this area. In other words, if they acknowledge that we have no problem and they discounted it, and after they're done with their discount, it's still 63,000 an acre average. So I thought I heard someone suggest that you make these all the same price per acre this year, and whatever happens next year happens. But it, bottom line is, why would we pay more? Why would our value be twice as much as somebody else over here, which actually has more value because this is through the fence, and I'm not sure you folks are familiar through the fence, but I'm sure some
access
of you
to, access to the runways.
Where you can leave your property and go right to the runway.
So when we look at, when we're looking at market value, we look at the market at large. So we're looking at a whole series of comps. So it's unfortunate that this one particular property is presenting itself as undervalued. But the thing is that when we look at value, I mean, we would never just look at one property, regardless of whether it's undervalued or it's never just one property. So, I mean, I'm glad that it's come to our attention because now next year maybe we can work to fix it and get that property back up to where it's supposed to be. But I think that that whole situation is, I mean, it's convoluted to say the least, and there are other comps to support a higher value. And in the grand scheme of things, in the big picture. So even though that one's right there, that doesn't mean that that's not, that, that, that that's the only comp that exists in Carson City.
I understand, but in the equalization on this entire page, this area is standalone. There's nothing that compares to it in Carson City. And if the assessor says that ours is worth X with discounts, it's still twice as much as the only other property, vacant property in this area. Why would that be equal? If theirs is 36 and doesn't have any detriment from rocks in the airport or anything, and ours is 66 or 63. I mean,
You
had your list of comps, as I explained to you. You got two comps at 500,000. Those were the pads that exist out there with the four buildings we were going to build. We've spent more than $500,000 a parcel on that with a compacted building pad, parking lots, utilities, and so forth. They're in place. That can't be a comp. And the number, I'm trying to figure this other one out, Deer Run Road, that's Eagle Valley's yard. It's rock base, it's fenced, it has utilities for their equipment. Hardly a vacant piece of property. So if you take those away, you got 215, 174, and I don't know what this other one is, $3. That's piecemeal them up.
You got it. You got it.
Anyway, I hope I made myself clear. You say that just there's different properties, different values. But my understanding of order of equalization is supposed to be equal. So if we got apples to apples here, why wouldn't ours be adjusted to what the green one is per acre and clear up whatever you're going to do next year? We've been paying this property tax on this thing for 30 years. Nothing's happened in 10. So I don't know where anybody thinks anything's went up. There's over 1 million square feet of buildings in this town that are empty. And we have people come to us all the time. The problem with the value of the property is that you can buy a building cheaper than you can build a building. So it's very hard for economical for a company to come in that needs a 20,000 square foot or 100,000 square foot building to buy some land, put a building up, but the building costs more than they could replace it right down the street. So, I mean, it's just common business. We're not collecting this for my old age because I'm already old.
Well, thank you for that.
Anyway.
like what we talked about it, we just need to take it one piece at a time. And I think the first piece would be talking about equalizing the appellant's property and the properties in Green. How are we going to look at that? Because with an 8% cap, no matter how you value it each year, it's probably going to, the Green property is probably going to hit that 8% cap. The SERPA property will probably go up as well in the next year, possibly stay the same.
Not if you reduce it down to the value of the Green properties.
But we're talking about bringing up the value of the Green properties as well, are we?
We can't do that. Again, we have not noticed the owners of the Green property, so we can't raise their values.
Well, that would be the next year's.
Next year, yes. Right. Next year, absolutely.
So what we're determining this year is whether we're going to lower SERPA's value, the SERPA family's value on all this stuff, is basically what we're up against.
Right, and you would be resetting the cap on their property taxes. And so at that point, they would all go up the same.
Okay, so after this year, they could all go up the same. Am I understanding you right?
Right, again, so for like parcel number, the same ones I just mentioned, 505, 126, and 27, they're currently on a 5 cents. If we were to equalize all of those, put them on at 75 cents, and then give them the 25% landlocked discount, then they would be raised up to 56 cents a foot. So, I mean, currently they're on at 5, and they're going to be going up to 56 cents a foot. So
on those two parcels.
Right.
So I went through and calculated the average price per square foot for just the three properties that Mr. Serpa Sr. had identified as the most comparable of our comps list. And even the average price per square foot of just those three is $2.45 a foot. So I think that we're still supported with those values of $225 to $250 prior to the discount. Any topographical discount.
Gotcha.
Topographical discount.
I'd also like to add, he is correct about the two parcels, the sale number 6 and sale number 7, that they did have improvements. And that is why we're nowhere near the $5 or the $5.06 or $5.24 per square foot that they
right.
we have. Because we were very aware that they do have improvements that are extremely valuable. So they were considered, but they were not considered improved. We took that out of the equation, so they were never considered at $5.24 a square feet or
right.
$5.06 a square foot.
Okay.
So the first thing I was talking about, we can direct you under the SERPA properties and the Green properties to next year be equal to apply a fair market value to those for next year, because that's one of our motion, or that's one of the three topics, correct?
Mr. Chairman, we had intended to do that anyway, but we're here talking about the 17-18 year, not 18-19.
Okay. If that's what you're already going to do, I'm not.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, was, again,
perfect.
We were going to raise them up 150% next year. So.
Okay. So with that said, we're down to basically two items instead of three,
no.
correct?
No.
No?
We still have to determine what the values are going to be for 17-18.
For next year?
For this year.
For this year. Okay. Whether they stay the same or whether they're going to increase.
No. Decrease. So that you can make them equalized
okay.
with.
We're asking, yeah, we're basically asking the assessor to
decrease
it seems
them.
Fair to us to decrease it to the same value as the Green properties.
Okay, it's clear as mud to me now. It's a little clearer anyway.
Certain ones.
So here's what we need to determine. Are we going to leave it the same, or are we going to decrease it? And that's what somebody would need to come up with in a motion, one of those two items, correct?
I move to hold the taxable values constant for APNs 5-05103, 5-05104, 5-05105, 5-051. Are we including 09? Five dash zero five one zero nine, five dash zero five one one six, five dash zero five one two two, five dash zero five one two three, five dash zero five one two seven, five dash zero five four zero three, five dash zero five four zero four, five dash zero five four zero eight, and five dash zero five four one one.
Did you get 2-4 in there as well?
No. I intentionally excluded.
Okay, 2-4. Perfect. I'm back with you.
Second it.
Okay, we have a motion and we have a second. Do we have any discussion on the motion? My comment, the next time you come, based on Mr. Heaton's letter, I think that would clarify some stuff as far as ownership, signing the affidavits and all that stuff beforehand. I think that would
Yeah, I don't think we're on that. We're still on the equalization of the properties.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Like I said, it's clear as mud, so... And I'm a slow learner. So any discussion or comments on the motion? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, motion carries. Now for the next item. Bear with me.
Clarification, you guys are stating for the record that the property values there are equal, just to be clear.
We're not stating for the record that the values are being equal. That's something they're going to take up next year. But what we are clarifying that the taxes that you're paying now, the valuation are going to stay the same. They're not going up this year.
The taxable value. The motion we just made was to hold the taxable values the same. So now we'll move on to see on the ownership issue.
Our motion was to reduce the taxes back to the fair to match the other neighboring property. That wasn't. We weren't asking you guys not to raise them.
Well, we can't.
They're going to raise them next year.
Right, move to hold them constant.
We can't do that at this point. All we can do is talk with your appeal on your valuation. So we're saying that your valuations.
So our $64,000 per acre value average is consistent with the $34,000 next door. I'm just trying to clarify that.
No.
What was your motion?
My understanding. I believe that Mallory's motion was to keep the taxable value the same as it was in the previous year. Is that correct?
The reason being that property, as I stated before, has its own convoluted mess of issues that need to be handled.
Which,
but that doesn't mean
property?
That it is a comp. The property that you've got highlighted in green. Just because it's a lower value doesn't mean that it's, I mean, it's not the only comp. And so we're looking at market value overall, not just that one comp. So I move to hold the taxable values constant because I believe that we're more than supported in a value of 225 to 250 for all of those.
And that's last year's valuation, correct?
1718.
So
land values.
So the values that were increased from 1617, we just made a motion to keep that increase.
So I think we're all confused on that. Holding constant, are you holding constant for the 1718 declared values, taxable values?
Or 16.
In your recommendation, are you saying go back to 1617?
I'm saying the 1718. Perfect. Should I have clarified that in the motion?
Just clarifying right now for the record.
Okay, so I'm clarifying right now for the record that by holding constant, I mean maintaining the value for 1718 that the assessor has already laid out.
Just to be clear, these folks here, how long has their property been valued at half the cost of our property, the value of our property right next door?
Over the last 3 years, all the properties are being brought up.
No, we used to own this property.
Right.
We didn't get that kind of a deal when we owned the property.
That's higher than what the current value is higher than what it was when you owned it.
So this was always undervalued.
It's been undervalued for many years.
If I may, this board doesn't have the jurisdiction to be talking about the value of that property because that the owner of that property wasn't noticed. So we can't discuss the value of that property at this meeting.
Okay.
What does the word of equalization mean then?
You can discuss it, but you can't change it. I mean, you're bringing it up as an example.
I'm bringing it up as an example. I'm not asking you to raise the neighbor's property taxes. That'd be kind of rude, I guess.
And what Ms. Wilson is saying is that just because that one property is not up to par with all the other comps doesn't mean that they're going to, that they can bring the value, all your values down to that one property. That's what she's saying. So
they can't, or they, you're saying that they don't, you don't think that's justified?
That's not a reason to. That doesn't, the one property does not determine market value, and we're determining the taxable value of your property based on market value.
Okay. So these people next year, their value will be raised in accordance with ours?
What they're doing is next year, which we don't have any jurisdiction over because obviously it hasn't happened, but what the assessor has told us that they are going to bring up all the values for their fair market value. So
we've been dealing with the office for years. They were constantly 18, chasing this thing.
18-19 is what I understand. Everything will be brought up to fair market value, which should balance out to where you, so it should equalize them next year. So 18-19.
Just again for clarification, 18-19, this parcel right here on the airport that we don't own, that we used to own, is going to be brought up to the same value as these other parcels.
It's going to be brought up about 150%.
And if that is actually not even going to be enough bring it to market value. Like I said, based on your recommendation, I have no problem doing that. I have no problem not doing it as a tiered over years and bringing everybody where they should be.
So basically, next year it'll be brought into equalization.
Yes.
We can do it that way. It would be a larger than 150% increase.
And that'll just be up to the assessor to determine that, since you can't make a decision on that today.
We would be more than happy to bring all of these parcels back to you next year.
Here's my
Well, to answer your question, Keith, yes, next year.
Yeah, this year we have to deal with this. I wish you had been here last year. We've been here almost every year.
So,
or at least have discussions with the assessor's office every year.
Well, and that's
these folks. So I'm just for conversation's sake, they're going to bring our parcels up because they think they're undervalued, and they're going to bring them up the same amount, 150%. They're still going to be, that green parcel is still going to be valued at half of what our average parcel is up there, and it's the same type of property. That's what we're, the whole point of Gus going to this equalization hearing, is to point this out. If they're only going to bring it up 150%, what are they going to raise ours at next year? I mean, they should technically go down if they're going to equalize it.
Well, and like I say, we don't have anything. We can't do anything at this point about next year, I understand what you're saying, but they're telling us that they are going to work on these properties to get them into equalization based on fair market value.
We do this every year.
I'm sure. I mean, it's everybody works really hard on all this stuff, and that's where, at this point in time, Mallory made a motion. We had a second that these valuations are going to be the same, and it was approved. With that said, before we get on to the next two agenda items, two motions in our thing, that you're more than absolutely welcome, and I encourage you to go appeal to the State Board of Equalization, which I know doesn't make it any easier. It's a lot more work and all that other stuff. But that's kind of where we are right now on that issue.
Perfect. Fair enough.
If I might, all we can do is, look at, we can only deal in this particular instance with, the values of these properties. We can only deal with these properties at the moment, and we can only use, the market value that we are able to come up with. So, I'm glad that it came to the assessor's attention that those properties are significantly undervalued, but that doesn't change the fact that what we're looking at is these set of properties, and they have a supported market value of that. So I just wanted to clarify to you, that's all we can do.
No, I got you there, but I'm asking for the record if this green undervalued parcel is going to be brought up to the same value as our
parcel. We can't put that on the record because we don't have the jurisdiction to talk about that.
You have to go through the process.
But yes, okay. It's known, and the assessor has the willingness to do that.
Okay, perfect.
So.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could, just for your own clarification, we've now been given guidance that we should not step it up. We should just go up to the fair market value for every property, no matter whether it's 300, 700, or whatever percent. We will just take it all the way up to market value.
Okay, great. So that's, we've got some clarification for that portion of it. So, okay, now on to the, it was unanimous.
Yes.
I didn't hear it.
Okay.
It was, Matt, did you hear the motion? Mallory, for a second.
Vote was unanimous. So now the next thing we're looking at is common ownership. Is that? So we're looking at common ownership at this point in time to determine whether it is common ownership and that the subdivision discounts will be applied, correct? Okay. Now we're talking about the ownership. So that if we determine that it has common ownership, that we could apply an additional discount, correct? Is that, am I comprehending this okay? So back to my comment that I wish we had some affidavit signed that saying who the ownership was of the LLCs. That's not specified with the Secretary of State's office.
Although you do have that affidavit from their attorney stating that it's all familial ownerships.
It's lineal ownership from the.
Does that say it in that statute in the NA or the NAC?
It says in Mr. Heaton's affidavit that it's lineal ownership, which means John Serpa Jr., Keith Serpa,
family.
John Serpa Jr.
Okay.
Are all one owner.
Right, and so.
As the LLC,
So I'm just clarifying that when you determine whether or not that constitutes common ownership, just, you know, look at NAC, which is page 16. Look at that, those definitions of what constitutes common ownership so that you can make your determination based on all of the facts and whether or not that satisfies NAC 361129.
So what the NAC 361129 paragraph 2 sentence A, the owner of a parcel is the person or entity as shown as such in the record of the county recorder. So what you're saying is that tells us that it's whether it's individuals in an LLC or just the entity shown. So if it's just the entity shown, I would say it doesn't matter if it's Keith, John Sr., Robert, who's unrelated to whatever. But because those LLCs is what the NAC is saying is common ownership, correct?
That's for you to determine.
Just to clarify, our attorney's signed affidavit that says that they're all owned by family members, so.
Right, and my only thing is the IRS doesn't see you guys one entity.
Correct.
They see you as three individuals and an entity.
On our personal tax returns, there's going to be a K-1 and
yep.
Various things that flow through that would show that those are all, they're all related.
It flows, yes, but you're all, it's all related through the LLC, but unrelated
gotcha.
Through the personal tax returns.
Just clarify.
So because this is an administrative code, it's not a statute. So we need to determine if the owner of the parcel is the person or entity shown in such records, and we don't have the affidavits. The affidavit from their attorney, Mr. Heaton, says that they are. We don't have signed affidavits. Mr. Heaton says that they would be more than willing to sign affidavits stating the fact that they have ownership in these LLCs, but we don't have those. Now, now we need to determine, is it the person or is it the entity as common ownership?
I just kind of want to add that I feel like the question is more, is it sufficient for, I mean, I know that we've got a little bit of guidance from Terry Rubel, but the question is more, is it sufficient for the manager to be the same throughout the entities to be considered the same entity, even though it's different entities? And not so much, you know, do we have sufficient evidence to support that? It's more, is that even enough to qualify for common ownership?
But the attorney has indicated it is family.
Right, but the question is it being owned by the same family, is that enough to be considered common ownership?
Right, so we're looking at, is it right. The entity or the three separate family members that might be two or three separate family members that could be involved? Because for all we know is you could have children that are involved as long as they're over the age of 18. You know, for
I'm not there yet.
You know, so that's good.
Well, and I don't know if you've it does say that the owner of the parcel is the person or entity.
Right, and you're telling us that we need to make the determination on that, correct? Or did I hear you wrong? Because right here, if you go with that, it's the person or the entity shown. So mm-hmm. we need to determine, is the person the owner, or is the entity the owner showing common ownership?
Either or.
In the definition of a person, it's also a corporation. So.
Okay, so being the fact that they didn't put in the code a natural person, which they do under NRS, but it doesn't say natural person or entity, so we're determining whether the entity is common ownership or the owners of the entity are the common ownership, correct? That's where I'm confused. I mean, I can look at it one way. We can say, well, it's the person, so no, it doesn't apply, or it's the entity, yes, it does apply. So
we can do the analysis both ways and come to a conclusion. So you can do it based on person and go through your analysis, or you can do the entity and make your analysis and come to a conclusion.
Okay.
I just want to point out that we have this definition from the Cambridge Dictionary of Common Ownership, and even there it specifies owned by one person or organization. So it's essentially the same. So even though we're going, you know, for off of administrative code, I mean, there is more than one place where it says one person or organization, or one person or entity.
If you were to peel back the layers of all of our protections or whatever, DGD is owned by me, and I believe it owns all the different entities.
But a LLC or a partnership is considered its own person.
Gotcha.
So anyway, with this discussion, any more questions? I'd like to entertain a motion if there are no more questions or comments. Would you like to make a motion?
Well, can you please put it on the record, your findings, just so for the that we have a clear record in case this is appealed. You need to make sure that you put on the record as to why you feel they qualify or why you feel they don't qualify, and put in all of the evidence that justifies your decision on that.
Okay, so Jill Levin.
But
you
still need to,
Jill. Yeah, we still do need to. And hey,
so we're ready to make a motion?
Yes. I'd like to entertain a motion.
I believe that we have sufficient evidence showing that this is common ownership, and they will qualify for a subdivision discount.
On the
properties we've discussed, in the amount of 30%, is that what we've decided?
Okay, well, that actually
that's
creates another motion.
That's on to number three. So
no, because that was supposed to be decided in the prior agenda item, and so because the parcels in book 8 did qualify. Ownership, contiguous, all across the board.
Okay.
And they had a 20%, which was deemed through an absorption study, subdivision discount. It was on the edge. I have no problem going to the next layer because I did have some support for both a 20% and a 30%. I had more support for a 20%, but I'm willing to go to a 30% subdivision discount. So what in turn might have to happen is if you deem that they do qualify for the subdivision discount, which is fine, I wrote it up as a 30% subdivision discount because I had anticipated book 8
coming to that same conclusion, which I have support in the Book 8 packet. I have no problem with that, but probably what will then happen is the Sierra Cloud parcels in Book 8 would then also be increased to a 30% subdivision discount, which is fine on our
end. Okay, so right here with this motion, we're determining NAC 361129, paragraph 2, of whether we're going to allow them as an entity, as common ownership, so they fit in the subdivision discount. What the other thing, the additional discount, what you mentioned in that motion would be our next motion to do with what Denise was just referring to. Okay. So
you have a motion on the table they qualify for the common ownership subdivision discount.
Yes.
And then there's no second yet. Or is there second?
We have a motion and Roy seconded it halfway upstream. So if you'd second that again, Roy.
Yeah. I did second it. And we have the affidavit that says that it's just SERPA.
We have a motion and we have a second.
Okay, now discussion.
Discussion on the motion.
I have discussion. I just kind of want to go on record as saying that I believe that having descendants of the same family as a manager of separate LLCs or partnerships is not sufficient to say that all of these properties are owned by one person or organization or by one person or entity, because they are in fact owned by separate people or entities.
Sure, we're having the discussion on the motion in the second, and it sounds like Jill is leaning towards the entities as common ownership, and that's how I perceive Mr. Roy is doing that as well. And what I've just heard from Mallory, it looks like she's going the other way. And now what you'd like us to hear is from Ms. McFadden.
If she wants to, she doesn't need to, but just lay on the record
for the reasons for how you're going to vote. Mm-hmm. Now is your time or forever hold your peace.
I agree. I feel that it should be looked at as common ownership, so that's
why.
Just because it's, although it is one family, I feel that it does combine into the common ownership, so.
Okay, and then the problem that I have is, of course, the NAC is not real clear what they've been trying to do, clarification in NRS. And it doesn't say, it says person or entity. It doesn't say natural person or entity. I do know the reasons for asset protection and protecting yourself and privacy, and that's what Nevada was built on in the corporate world. And so I just have for not having the signed affidavits, which I know you guys would be willing to do, I too look at saying that it does not, I'm going with the personal aspect, which is there's more than one person, so I don't think that qualifies as well. So that's where my vote's leaning. So with that said, do we have any other comments on the motion in a second? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Two nays.
Wilson and Block. And we have three yays. So that motion carries. Okay, now we're on to item three, whether we're going to give additional discounts based on the subdivision code.
Okay. It's whether you'd rather go with the 20% that's already in place or the 30% that was recommended,
or more.
The 30% that was recommended within my packet, or if you want to come up with an additional.
Okay, Jill? Would you like to talk? You mentioned the 30% earlier.
I'd like to make a motion to apply a 30% discount to the subdivision we've discussed.
I second that motion.
I have a question. That's over and above the 50% discounts we're already giving, correct?
Yes, it is.
I have discussion.
Perfect.
I do think that there is evidence to support an absorption period of 4 to 6 years. So that would be why I'm about to vote like I am.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed?
Nay.
And one nay. So anyway, with that, a little confusing day for us, but I appreciate both of you gentlemen coming up and bringing this to our attention, and I do welcome you to go to the State Board of Equalization to appeal this, and the date for the State Board is when?
March 10th.
March 10th. And so, anyway, thanks for coming. This was a lot of reading, a lot of research, and I know
right. I think I'm up next again anyway.
Okay.
So hopefully a lot shorter.
I'd like to take a 5-minute recess, so we'll reconvene about 10:35. Okay, I reconvene the Carson City Board of Equalization back to order. It's 10:35 a.m. On to item F for possible action. Petition for review of taxable valuation of Tahoe 3 LLC, 1213 Fairview Drive, APN 009-552-03. Mr. Serpa, would you like to please come forward and tell us what's going on?
I sent you guys a packet on this one also. Oh, Keith Serpa. This one hopefully will be much more brief. In the letter, I tried to just call it out as clear as I could. In the assessor's comps, they're showing their comps around average $32 a foot. And we're just asking that we be equalized somewhere near there. All of their comps show they got 36, 18, 33, and 42. Average is 32 per square foot. It might have just been an error. It looks like they could have valued us at $32 a foot and then added the property value, the land value, back in by mistake. I'm not sure. They'll have to address that.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. Back to the assessor.
Good morning. For the record, Donald Massow, Carson City Assessor's Office. This is regarding APN 009-552-03, agenda item F. So I'm just going to start with our process, and then we can discuss the particulars of it. So I do have to make a correction in the file. There was a typographical error. It's identified as light industrial. It's actually limited industrial, which is simply a typo. It didn't change code of ordinances or consideration of highest and best use or anything like that. So anywhere it reads light industrial, it's actually limited industrial. My apologies. So, excuse me, the subject parcel is a mostly... It's let's see here real quick. It's a 4.93 limited industrial parcel. It's 50% open RV storage, and a lot of that is undeveloped. The other part is 45% mini warehouses and an on-site residence, manager's residence, I believe. So what we typically do when we're based on the appeal, we look at the property with three different approaches. We use the income approach, the cost approach, and the market value approach. And we try to determine which is the most reliable approach, and which will give us the taxable value, the market value for the property. So typically we'll start out with the code of ordinance, what the land use codes allow for the property. We look at highest and best use, and I'm sure we've all heard this before, but I'll reiterate it for the record, that highest and best use, as determined by the International Association of Assessing Officers, is defined as that use which will generate the highest net return to the property over a period of time. And the reason I bring this up is because this property has a great amount of undeveloped land on it, which is basically surplus land. It would naturally return a higher yield if it was fully developed. So based on the lack of use of it, doesn't preclude it from being valued as property, as its inherent value that it would gain in the market. So along with that, going back to the approaches, we looked at the income approach, which was supplied by the appellant. They gave us their profit and loss income data, and I believe that's on page 13. Page 13. Thank you, Dave. And we determined, I got to look at it here. So upon looking at this data, what they show, I'm just going to use the third column, for example. What they show is they've included in their net operating income, or their expenses, is taxes and depreciated expense, which we don't typically add to the income approach. It just doesn't apply. So we looked at what their income would turn out to be is their net operating income would be $86,570. So we have to look at the market income approach as well. So what the rest of the market is comprised of all our data sources, realtors, commercial data services, and all the other data that we gather to develop the market approach. We don't just use what's submitted by the appellant. So upon that, we looked at that information as well, and the net operating income for the market approach was $137,000 and a little bit of change. And the value using that potential gross income was $1,446,189. Now, a lot of this isn't in your packet simply because we did not feel that approach was accurate enough based on the accuracy that the market approach would give us based on sales comps. So, again, we have to look at all three approaches. So moving on from there, of course, we looked at the cost approach, which the assessor always uses cost. We use replacement cost, new, less depreciation. That's and the land value separately based on market, which has, as you can see, on page 53, the cost approach totals $1 million added to the land value, brings us a total taxable value of $1,570,549. So that's currently in our assessment. Then finally, we looked at the market value approach. And we compiled comparable sales that were similar, very similar. We do have sales that represent this at $32 per square foot, which is very conservative from our point of view. Current listings are supportive of that value as well. In fact, they're a little higher, but listings aren't always as accurate as you would hope them to be. And then, so we also have to look at, going back to the vacant land issue, is that there's surplus land on this property that's undeveloped. So additionally, we looked at vacant land listings and sales. Excuse me. We looked at vacant land sales, and those land sales also supported a very conservative approach of $4 per square foot. And the reason why we can do this is because this land, if anyone else wanted to buy this amount of land, I mean, if it was 10,000 square feet on a 4.9 acre parcel, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a sizable amount of land that it could actually be used for something else, or its highest and best use is not currently be used right now on the subject. So with those three things, Without those three approaches, we determined that the market value approach was the most reliable because there are plenty of sales to support that information. So the confusion of us just taking the land and adding it in on top of the improvement value is not entirely true, because the highest and best use for this property would be to fully build it out completely, and then your net return from that would be much higher than only using 45% of the property. So that's why we came up with the value for the land at, I believe it's $476,000, the surplus land, and the improvements, the approved valued land, and the improvements, I think we got here five, no, that's the appellant. Excuse me. Thanks, Dave. It's on page 15. Taxable land value, I'm sorry, the improvement value of $1,055,146 for a total taxable of $1,570,549. So I got to collect my thoughts for a second.
Okay, so sorry, Dave Dolly. So what we are proposing is to keep the land value the same at $515,403. And lower the improvement value to $728,051 for a total of
$1,243,454.
Yep.
Okay, great. Any question by the board? Mr. Serpa, is there something else you'd like to add?
We in your packet, we went through the same process as I didn't catch your name. Sorry, sir.
Donald.
We can go right through the same thing on page. I don't know what page it is. We did the same thing with the income approach. Added the depreciation back in because they don't recognize that. Took it at a 9 cap per their suggestion for last year. At a 9 cap rate, that would make the value $775,000 all in. The improvements and the land. They didn't think that was the best approach. My only comment on the comps is they don't add the land back in on when they're comparing the sale. These comps are $32 a foot average, and that's their comps, not ours. And also, all their comps are either general, looks like general industrial, not limited industrial, so it's a higher and better use. And then you got retail commercial, also higher and better use. So we felt that our $32 a foot was pretty conservative. Let me see here. That was the market value approach, right? We didn't calculate it that way. We did the income and then the market value. By their own comps at $32 a foot, that's not a 1.2. That's closer to $800,000.
Hey, Commissioner, questions?
Isn't that the square feet of the building, not the lot?
They're taking the actual sale price in their comps. It's in my package and theirs. They're taking an average sale price of the land. So that include, but when they sell the land, they're selling the buildings and the land. So their average is 36. 18, 33, 42, averages 32. That's for the property. That's for the land and the improvements. Those are comparable sales at a higher and better use.
You bet.
So, Donald Massa, for the record. So, on the comps on page 17, the sales comps that we used, reason why none of the land is treated as surplus land is because all of these comparables are fully built out. There's nothing else they can do with them. They put in the asphalt, they put all the buildings in, and that is the use of that property, whether it's general industrial, whether it's residential, whether it's limited industrial, they're not going to do, it's less likely that they will bulldoze that whole thing down and use some of that land for something else. They're all fully built out, except for Comp 1. And Comp 1 has a giant cell tower on it. They're leasing that like 2 acres of that land for the cell tower at the very end by the railroad tracks. And the use of that land is, you know, they need ingress, egress, they need access. There's really nothing they can do with that land once they sign that lease for that cell tower, and they're getting paid for it too. So that's why there was no surplus land for me to actually apply to any of the comps as well. And same with the listings as well. They're all fully built out as well. So if there was surplus land that was there, I would have included it. And honestly, if Comp 1 had surplus land, their value would have been a little lower, but it wouldn't be below what we're looking at. And plus, they're getting lease value for that 2 acres, so that's where the value for their full property comes from. The reason, based on the income approach, the reason we didn't pick the income that was submitted by the appellant is because the market income shows a completely different figure. And like I said, it's all the data that we gather, and the market income shows that the property is worth $1,446,000 plus. And our assessed valuation is $1,570,549. We do agree that that's the taxable value, the current taxable value is over the assessed value, which is why, based on the appraisal, we still have the value of,
Yeah, you got it at 1.2. You recommended at 1.2.
Correct. And that's with adding economic obsolescence for this 17, 18-year-old.
We finally qualify. Or is it just economic?
Well, we found, based on the market approach, that taxable value is higher than market value. So we have to rectify that, and we're going to do that with economic obsolescence for the period year of 17, 18 only.
So you're going to reduce the improvement value and apply economic obsolescence, or no?
The reduction of the improvement value includes the economic obsolescence, because you can only apply economic obsolescence to improvements, not to land.
Okay. And just so I'm clear, why do we not qualify for the income approach?
Well, because the taxable value of the income approach... The market value of the income approach was less.
Dave Dolly.
Yeah, it's more than.
So what happens with the income approaches is we use the market income approach, not yours. We want to make sure that you're within what is typical for the market itself. To give you an example, there's a property. It's a shopping center on Highway 50, and it's fully occupied. However, the owners have not been receiving rent from the tenants for a number of years. And so they provided us with their income statement, and their income statement does not include the rents. The fact that they are not getting the rents is not an issue. So they should be getting the rents, and so we have to change the income statement to reflect what the market is actually doing. And that's what we did with the market value. So we tried to make sure that your numbers were within the range, and we actually used what the market income was doing.
So just out of curiosity, with that particular, did they get extra income obsolescence or
they
something?
They did not.
So they're just stuck.
Correct. Unfortunately, that's not an issue of that pertains to taxation. That's a legal issue that they have to deal with their tenant. But we used what the rents would have been had they been receiving it, and that was the numbers that were used as far as the revenues that were generated.
For our purposes of our property, we are fairly full. We're the buildings, the storage portion is full. The vacant land that we use for RV storage is fairly full and occupied. So I just wasn't sure why the income approach wouldn't apply. We're at max that unless we can go get a bank loan and build the.
Denise Chalak, Carson City Assessor's Office. Yes, absolutely. I don't know that it's, I didn't fully complete your packet, but I did do the income approach for your property months ago when we had spoke sooner. And I did not show using market data that you did qualify for any obsolescence at that time. But I know in the past that you have.
Right.
And so, and what I had done is you were on my list. Every year, any property that has qualified in the past, we ask for statements, income and expense statements, every year until they no longer qualify. Or, and if you don't qualify any longer but you still believe you do, you can be put back on our list and we will do it every single year for you.
Right.
And so what we do is we compile our data multiple ways. We do it through interviews with commercial realtors. We do it through, there's some commercial industrial databases. There's that we utilize. There's some local CBRE publishes, you know, quite a few reports. We have to take that into consideration, even though they focus mainly on the Reno-Sparks area. And then we also compile all the data from the different property owners that want to be considered for economic obsolescence. And so our numbers come quite a bit of a different way. When I utilized your information, I do it both ways. I do it with your information and then I do it with market, just so I can kind of make sure that I have it correct. And with your information, I actually arrived at a value of $961,889. And that's utilizing your information. So we're still a little bit different there, but I think that's due to how we calculated, whether or not we calculated depreciation and the taxes.
Yeah, you guys said you didn't use that, so we took it back out, or we added it back in.
Right.
And then just...
And then taxes as well. So,
those don't apply also?
No, they do not. I'm sorry about that. And then, and that's just standard for assessment purposes.
So, in your, what do you show us at?
$961,889.
Okay.
However, with market data, as far as income and expenses and whatnot, we have a value used in PGI as $1,446,189. And so, you know, I contributed a lot of that to the surplus land, the difference in the surplus land. And now if you're saying that a lot of that is through RV rental, I assumed when I'm looking at the parcel that your RV rental was on the asphalt portion of that parcel.
No, it's on the
and that the
of
vacant, their that was just vacant, it's just bare land, so I didn't know that you parked.
No, it's striped and we do boat and RV storage there, so it's without coming out of pocket to build more buildings, we're basically at the max we can get out of that property.
Right.
Without raising rents or doing something else.
Right. Okay. Then, I mean, that's something that we should definitely take into consideration when you're looking at this. If you look at the overhead part, I think Dave is pulling it up. I'm not sure if you'll be able to see it. The back half of this parcel is bare land, and so it looks as though the portion of the parcel receiving income would be the housing unit for the manager would hold value, the storage units themselves, and the paved portion of this lot for RV storage. You know, I mean, that's something to take into consideration when you're looking at this, if they are, in fact, gaining income from this land, it may need to be taken into consideration.
I
Yep.
When they talk about fair land, it's rock covered, base covered.
Right.
Also, your income includes the rental trucks on the front.
Correct.
But here's the magic, which you have yelled. They said this is the best, and they're using this. Can you get them to admit that this is the best, meaning this sale up here?
Yeah.
That they made an error by adding the land back in. I
right.
know you said it, but you need to restate it.
I agree.
Admit.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can see it's this back portion right over here that is what we used there for the first time. So,
there's some setback issues there too. Yeah, you can see in the picture there, that's all the front portion on Fairview is a parking lot for U-Haul rental. And then the parking lot behind, that's actually gravel base or DG or whatever, and that's RV storage, RV and boat storage.
And then the dirt portion in the back is that's
still technically bare land.
Okay.
But there's a setback issue there as well. Even though the neighboring property owner doesn't have that issue, it's still a condition for us. I don't know if it's 20 feet or 50 feet. I don't recall. So that's not technically all usable land or developable land. Yeah.
I have a question for you. On your letter, you have the square footage of your buildings as 214,751 square feet.
That's from the assessor.
Well, that's.
I think that's. Those aren't the buildings, that's the entire property.
Okay. Because that comes out to 5 million.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's kind of a. And this is not from my office. It's kind of mix and match as far as the way they lay it out. So we kind of had to look at that too.
Which parcel are we talking about on that last number you were?
The subject parcel, our parcel.
You're talking about the land, total land square footage.
He asked a question about the total land.
Okay, thank you.
If that was our buildings, the square footage of our buildings, we wouldn't be here today.
Well, with that said, I wish you weren't. So, any more comments or questions? Anybody would like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion that the 2017-18 land value remain the same. The improvement value to be lowered to $728,051, and for a total taxable value with the land included, $1,243,454.
I second that motion.
We have a motion. That's
on APN 009552-03.
Okay, so we have a motion with the APN put on that with the second. Do we have any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Like I say, any and all of this that you want to appeal, you can go to the State Board of Equalization and do that. And I do appreciate you two gentlemen coming in and being here today. And enjoy the sunshine while it's out there.
Thanks for your time.
Okay, so where are we now? We are on item G for possible action, petition for review of taxable valuation of OTRE Investments LLC and OTRE Capital LLC located at 2901 South Carson Street, APN 009-112-32. Would the assessor's office like to, I don't think that the appellant's here.
We need to get him on the phone.
Okay.
Should we wait for him?
No, but it's not coming on speaker. Right.
David, can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Okay, we got you going. Okay, my name is David. Great. I'm with the Carson City Assessor's Office, and you're on speaker now with the County Board of Equalization. So we'll go ahead
Great.
And we'll start it, and we'll have the chairperson identify the property. Sorry, David. We need to swear you in real quick.
Sure, my business partner is going to be walking in a second too. We can, if you need to swear him in, you can as well. He's here now, actually.
Okay, he's going to be testifying.
Hello?
He's going to be testifying.
Sure, yes.
Okay, so if you could both raise your right hand, I'm just going to trust that you're doing it. Raise your right hand.
Okay.
Do you test and affirm that the testimony that you're about to give is of truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, gentlemen, and if you could, when you speak, if you could identify yourself before you speak.
Sure.
Okay, so yes. What'll happen is the chairperson will identify the property, and then you'll have 15 minutes in order to go over the information that you have. Then the assessor's office will have 15 minutes to go over their information. We'll have questions, then you can rebut, and then we'll rebut, and then they'll decide.
Great.
Okay, good morning, gentlemen. Now we're on to your item G. It's for possible action, petition for the review of taxable valuation of OTRE Investments LLC and OTRE Capital LLC at 2901 South Carson Street, APN 009-112-32. Now it's time for you to present. If each one of you, when you speak the first time, if you'd state your name for the record, I'd appreciate it.
Gentlemen, are you hearing this?
And he's just trailing off at the end there. We heard the rest of it, though.
Okay. Well, just state your name for the record when you first speak, and then we'll have you guys present your evidence, and then we'll go to the assessor. We'll bring it up to board member comments, questions for you and the assessor,
and then we'll let you rebut and the, as well as the assessor. So go ahead and start.
Well, this is a little formalistic for us, but I would just like to make sure that everyone's read the actual packet that we received in the mail. By the way, this is David Boudreau speaking, sorry. I just want to make sure that everyone's actually read the packet that we received in the mail from your office. So is that a starting point for us that everyone has read the material?
Yes, we've all read the material. We had it a few days ago. So we've already been burst on it, but if you could tell us what's going on.
Great. So we can give you the history of the transaction itself if you guys want to hear all of that, or we can just dive right into what we see the, I guess, flawed assumptions are in the packet from our perspective. Would you like to hear the history of the sale first?
If you'd like to, that's completely up to you, or you can dive directly right in where you see there's a discrepancy.
And sir, if I might, I mean, the our package is not, I mean, it's just evidence. It's not to whether you have to agree with it or not. I mean, it's just our package.
No, sure, that's fine. So the property itself went on the market in, let's see, the end of 2014. It was marketed by Jones Lang LaSalle, the chief broker on the sale for the particular piece of property that we purchased is a broker by the name of Kevin Michelke. And I guess I should actually back up a little bit even further from that, because the sale's not going to make a whole lot of sense unless you know the history of AAA. AAA apparently in 2011 made a strategic decision to divide their insurance side of their business from their auto club side of their business. When they made this decision to split off the two sides of their business, they made, I guess they sold each one of their locations from the auto club to the insurance exchange, and the insurance exchange then turned around and leased the properties back to the auto club for a certain period of time. That was done on 20-plus properties that were owned in the California, Arizona, Nevada, I guess, division of AAA. Again, that happened back in 2011. For this particular property, the auto club sold the property to the AAA Insurance Exchange for $450,000. Again, that closed in 2011. The auto club leased the property back from the Insurance Exchange, and in 2014, the Insurance Exchange decided to sell the properties. Again, this was not done just for our property. It was done in a portfolio of properties.
This is Brad Mark speaking, but this is the only property that we bought. This is one property.
Yes, we only bought one property. Where am I going with this? So 2014 marketing campaign begins by JLL, Kevin Michelke. The property is nationally marketed. It is blown out through all kinds of advertising. In a standard transaction, OTRE puts a bid in for the property. There's a negotiation back and forth, and we closed on the property in March of 2015. We have zero relationship with AAA. We have never had them as a tenant other than this building. We do not own any other former AAA buildings. We don't even really know anyone at AAA. So I think there's a mass confusion here that this transaction was not an arm's length deal, because the purchase price that we bought the property for in 2015, by coincidence, happened to be the same exact amount that the auto club sold the building to the insurance exchange in 2011. And that number is $450,000.
And this is Brad Marks, and I'd also like to add that prior to this transaction, we did not have a relationship with Kevin Michelke.
Yes. Never spoken to him before.
Yes.
So it seems to us that there's some resistance to really really evaluating and putting some stock in our purchase price, because it seems like the assessor's office is looking at this deal as a non-arm's length transaction for some reason that we can't really get our head around. And that's why, in essence, we are protesting the assessed value.
Okay, great. With that being said,
and just
go ahead.
Sorry, this is David again. If I guess if we have a certain amount of allotted time, I mean, we do have some issues with some of the comps that were used to come up with the current assessed value as well. Would you guys like us to get into that kind of nitty gritty, or do you not want to hear that?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Let's see. We were given two sets of comps in the packet that was mailed over to us. One was the comps for improvements, and the other one is comps for land. And then Jeremy, forgive me if I'm butchering your last name, Jeremy, Sapoznik also sent us some additional comps and some email traffic that I think was also in the packet. So this may be a little jumbled, but let's start with Improved Sales Data Sheet B, which is the building comps, if you will.
What page number is that, please?
Page, bottom of the page says 59. I don't know if that's, it is under Assessor Evidence in your package, I believe.
Got it. Okay, go ahead, please.
Great. Sale one was sort of discarded, which we agree with because it's not even close to on point. So you guys came up with an average square foot value on the improvements of $152, which is an average of sale 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. 2, 3, and 4, we agree are relevant comps. 5 and 6 to us are massive outliers because those are highly specialized buildings that are not comparable to ours. Sale number 5 is a specialized medical office building with lab stations and nursing stations and all kinds of stuff that would increase its value that we don't have. The sale number 6 is a similar situation. That is a specialized building with auto lifts for auto repair. It's a former Jiffy Lube building that is not comparable to our building. And the other reasons we think sales 5 and 6 should not be used as comps is that those two buildings are only 40% of the size of our building. They're obviously much smaller, and smaller little buildings like that go for a premium.
Okay. So noted. Anything else you'd like to say before we go to the assessors for their assessment?
Yeah, David Boudreaux speaking again. The other one is sort of a general comment. This may be a highly regulated thing, but I thought it was curious that the window of time that we're using for these comps is basically our sale is at the very beginning of the window that was used for sale comps in a rising market. So, of course, our sale is going to look like it's artificially low in that instance. I would think the equitable way to do it would be to have some comps before our sale and some comps after our sale.
Okay. So let's move on to the assessor so he can fill us in on all this.
Jeremy Sapoznik with the Carson City Assessor's Office. Good afternoon. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so to get right down to these comparables, I agree that the...
Identify yourself.
Already did.
Okay.
Did you hear me identify myself? Okay, Jeremy Sapoznik with the Carson City Assessor's Office. Anyway, the comparables 5 and 6 are a little bit superior compared to the subject, but this sales sheet B reflects properties that have similar types of location as your property does. Sales sheet A reflects buildings that are similar to your property with inferior locations. Can we do something about this reverb? So again, when looking at sales sheet B, thank you. When looking at sales sheet B, not all of the weight in the average is given to comparables 5 and 6. As you can see, most weight is given to sale 2 and sale 6, with everything else having an influence on the average value conclusion. So again, the sales sheet B is an average of competing property with similar location. And that comes with a total of $704,901. And then when you look at sales sheet A with similar buildings with inferior locations, you come to a value conclusion of $622,259. So the value, your current taxable value is $658,626,000. And it falls between both of those numbers, the $704,000 and the $622,000. And it's my opinion, with this data and the listings and the support for the land value and the support of the cost approach, that our taxable value is well supported, and it's in between these two numbers of sales sheet A and B. So that's why we feel strongly that the $658,626,000 taxable value is accurate and well supported. And that's what I have to say about that.
Clarify sales sheet A. I don't. Is that what's in your email traffic, or is that, was that separately part of the assessor evidence?
Sales sheet A should be page 51 of your packet.
All right, hold on 1 second. Sure. I don't know if we seem to have gotten sales sheet A. Let's see. Bear with us here 1 second. All right, let us look through this real quickly. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to do this off the cuff because sales sheet A is was not part of our email traffic. So let's look at it real quickly. 200 square feet, 1995. Office. Okay, sale one.
General, some of the ones with the high, this is Brad Marks speaking, and again, some of these smaller properties are you know, two-thirds the size,
right, and
are less, and they're going for a premium. And then if you look at the one that's probably most comparable at 5,500 square feet, that one went for $100 a square foot, which is, you know, probably most comparable with ours. So again, you know, I think our argument is that the smaller properties do go for a premium price per square foot, and that it's not fair to,
Yeah, I mean, David speaking again. David Boudreau, the single comp on sales sheet A that is comparable to our property because it's similar in size, as Brad said, is sale number 5, which traded at $100 a foot, which is about what we bought our property for. The other ones are outliers because they're just too small. They're half the size or less.
And you can even see how that works because the larger property of 9,600 square feet went for $87 a square
foot. Right, so it's a perfect correlation between size and price per value, price per foot, excuse me. That combined with the fact that the sale price was the sale price and it was an arm's length transaction is why we think the assessment is off.
Okay, fair enough. So a question for the assessor's office. Did you state that this was not a true arm's length transaction anywhere?
Not in the report.
Jeremy Sposnick.
It says it on the improved sales data sheet A, the comment for our subject site.
Okay. Now back to the assessor, and then we'll go to board member comments and questions.
From our point of view, Jeremy Sposnick, from our point of view, the $450,000 transaction that we keep talking about really has no place in this conversation in all reality. The data we've provided in the packet supersedes that $450,000 transaction in every way. Again, you stated that the transaction is outside the window of sales that we used for analysis, and that's true, but that's not the only reason why it was left out. The main reason it was left out is because we've classified it as a B transaction, and it is not considered arm's length. But again, that's not the reason why we're here for the appeal. The reason why we're here for the appeal is to support the taxable value of the property. Now, you focused on the property that sold for $100 a square foot quite a few times. We've talked about it in the past. That's on sales sheet A, Valley Appliance at 3060 Highway 50 East. Now, you do like that comparable a lot, but that comparable is not surrounded by auto dealerships, shopping centers, casinos. That property does not have 125 linear feet of frontage on the main thoroughfare through Carson City. That property is far to the northeast in a less desirable economic area of Carson City. So to put a lot of weight on that $100 a square foot sale is really errant. And that's, again, why we've given you A and B. Again, improved sales sheet A reflects properties that are somewhat similar to yours, the best we could find, in inferior locations. And then sales sheet B has properties with their own issues, but with similar location. So we've pulled the best data we could possibly bring together and put them on two separate sheets. Again, one value coming just over $622,000. The similar locations coming in at just over $700,000. And your taxable value is right in between. And focusing on one sale, that $100 a square foot sale, is really not accurate. And due to the nature of the sales we have to work with, we've got to look at the picture as a whole and consider all the aspects.
We agree that you have to look at the picture as a whole. So, and we just discussed that we don't have the perfect comp here. We don't have what we really need to identify value. So, therefore, you look back to the purchase price, which was an arm's length transaction. That has to be somewhat relevant. It can't be ignored.
And this is Brad Mark speaking. Jeremy, just one question. Would you agree that smaller buildings typically go for a premium price per square foot?
There's evidence, Jeremy, again, there's evidence to support that, and we could probably find evidence that doesn't support it. But, again, I don't think that's the main case of this argument.
It's not an argument. We're just presenting sides. This is Dave. I'm the Carson City Assessor, and this is not an argument. We're presenting our values and how we're supporting our values, and you're supporting your values, and then we're going to have the Board of Equalization determine which is the value that should be on this property. So this is not an argument, so I just needed to clarify that.
Yeah, David, we didn't intend it to be an argument. We're just...
No problem. This is the chair. Let's just go on to commissioner or board member questions. Do you guys? I'll start. I was just curious. I see that you gentlemen are incorporated in the state of California. Is there any reason why you haven't qualified to do business here in Nevada?
Yeah, this is David speaking. I don't know if. That's a good question. We don't know if we're required to or not.
Well, typically when we're transacting some sort of business or have property in Nevada, I think that would be a good assumption, but I would defer you to your legal counsel to make sure that whether or not you're in compliance.
Yeah, sometimes it turns on how passive or impassive you are as an investor, and I think it's a little bit nuanced. I don't think it's binary on that one.
Well, I think you're collecting lease rents and things like that. You're deriving income from it more than just a holding device. But anyway, I defer that to your legal counsel.
But is that really relevant to our assessed value?
Well, it's not relevant to your assessed value, but I think it's relevant that you are in a perception of mine that you might maybe conducting business in the state of Nevada. And that's typically what you would do when you do that in another state. So. I'm just bringing that up. So thank you for your comment. Now, onto the board. Anybody have any follow-up questions, comments? We're pondering at this point in time.
Member Rasner, this is for the assessor's office. And I know that you indicated that you're not using this as a arm length transaction. It's a non-arm length, the other way around. Could I have a reason why? Is it because the sale's too old?
Jeremy Sapoznik. Okay, so this $450,000 transaction that happened back on 3/6 of 2015, shortly after that sale occurred, we're in the process of analyzing that sale. We sent a questionnaire to the
purchasers.
Grantee, and they did not return it. Then they called our office and started talking with some of our staff about the transaction and still declined to provide that sales questionnaire. So while we were in the process of verifying the sale back in 2015, we ran into a situation where they were not forthcoming with the information we requested. So that, compared to the rest of the information we had, caused us to classify.
Sorry to interrupt. This is David Boudreaux here. So are you saying we didn't respond to you on a sales questionnaire? Is that right?
Back in 2015, we sent you a sales questionnaire and you did not respond at that time. Back in 2015, we classified this as a B transaction because we did not have enough information to consider it an A transaction. Prior to the 2015 sale, in 2011, this property also sold for $450,000. So a sale in 2011 at $450,000, and a sale in 2015, 4 years later, at $450,000, and then the inability to receive the information requested from you in 2015 left us in a position to classify this $450,000 transaction as a B sale. And on top of that, this $450,000 transaction really has no impact on this appeal hearing. So we could talk about this $450,000 transaction anytime, but to bring it into the appeal hearing is actually convoluting this whole situation. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, we had this issue at one of the, I'm sorry, Dave Dolly, Carson City Assessor. We had this issue at one of the other appeals that we had heard this year. When you look at 361-227, where it says Nevada cases, it says the State Board of Equalization not required to accept the purchase price of property as a sole indicator of value, which means that there was a purchaser of some property, and they purchased the property, but we weren't required to use that as the value. If we have the sales, in which we believe we do, to indicate a higher value, then the sales price is really, a moot point.
Okay, great.
If we were asked to fill out a sales questionnaire and we didn't, that was, I guess, an oversight on our part. I don't even recall receiving a request. I'm sure you probably sent it. But I would think now you have enough information to change your classification of the transaction from a non-arm's length to an arm's length. And if you need any further information from us to do that, we're happy to give it. The second point I'd like to make is we're not asking for our sale price to be the sole consideration for the assessed value. We're only asking for it to be used as a component of it.
Jeremy Sapoznik again. Okay, so recently when we requested the sales questionnaires from you, you provided them right away, and I looked at the information on those sales questionnaires, which should be included in this packet, and I just determined that the information provided at this date supported my conclusion in classifying the sale as a B transaction.
David Boudreaux speaking. I hear you, but I don't understand you. I don't understand that. But that's just me. Maybe that's just me.
That's fine. Maybe an impasse or not, but we're going to go for we have a commissioner here that has a question or a comment.
Member Wilson, I am curious as to the income approach. I mean, maybe this is a dumb question, but do we have the information to do an income approach to value?
In this packet, in the review process, some comments were changed on page 19. In regards to the income approach, we requested information from Mr. Boudreaux, and he declined to provide that income information. We would have used his income information to influence the market data had we decided to complete the income approach. But let's see, the comment here at the bottom of page 19, it says, therefore, second sentence in the third paragraph from the bottom, the second sentence is, therefore, the assessor's office was unable to determine a value based on the income approach, and that's actually incorrect. What it should have read was, we decided not to include the income approach because it was not necessary to arrive at a credible opinion of value. So,
thank you.
All right, do we have any other commissioner? Let me get from the board, make sure there's no more questions here, sir. Any other comments, questions of the appellant or the assessor's office? Okay, sir, you have another final comment.
David Boudreaux speaking. If I could, one more final comment. The reason the income data was not disclosed is because the property was purchased with the auto club on a very short-term lease. Therefore, you can't just put a multiple or a cap rate on the annual rent for the property and come up with a value based on income, because the open market won't do that. That's not how the property would be valued.
Okay, so are the tenants still leasing from you?
Yes, they have a small amount of term left.
Okay, fair enough. With that said, we've heard both sides of the equation. We don't have any more Do we have any more comments for the appellant or the assessor's office? Okay, with that said, I'd like to entertain a motion.
I recommend that we retain the current taxable value of $658,626. As I see, I think it's below value on APN 009-112-32.
Okay, so we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second the motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do we have any discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none.
I think we need to amend the motion to say I move to hold that instead of, I don't know if that matters, if that's.
Can you read back the motion for me?
Can you read back the motion?
Okay. Can you ask for a friend? Can you ask for a rephrasing of the motion and then a second?
Sure. Can we get a rephrase of the motion, Roy?
I recommend that we take the assessor's value of $658,626 as the value for the taxes on APN 009-112-32.
Okay, we have a motion and an amendment, a motion and a second with the amendment. Do we have the second on the rephrase?
Second.
Okay. So any other discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time on this. You do have the ability to appeal to the Nevada State Board of Equalization, and that date is going to be on?
The deadline to appeal the State Board of Equalization is March 10th, so you would need to get in touch with the clerk prior to March 10th to fill out the appeal form.
Were you?
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Have a good day.
I forgot who I was talking
to.
Yeah. Next year should go pretty quick. Okay. On to item H for possible action. Petition for review of taxable valuation for Jacobs, Tom, and Patty, 1992 Revocable Trust, Thomas and Patty Jacobs, Trustees, 2110 North Carson Street, APN 001-032-04. To the Assessor's Office.
Good morning. Denise Gillette with Carson City Assessor's Office. And actually, this was kind of a unique situation as well. I kind of put a lot on you guys today. I'm sorry about that. But I recommended that Mr. Jacobs appeal. Our hands were tied. It's the subject property. It's a 0.791 acre vacant commercial property on Carson Street. And this is kind of a unique situation due to the fact that it's contaminated. It's located next to where Eagle Gas is located. I don't know that it's still considered Eagle Gas, but where Eagle Gas was once located. And there was, due to years of leakage in the underground tanks, along with a minor spill, the ground parcel next to them, which is the parcel in question, along with underneath Carson Street, going into the parcel where McDonald's is located, and Cal Ranch, have all been contaminated, or deemed contaminated. The issue with this parcel that makes it unique is this is a vacant parcel that's could be considered for development. It's being marketed as a parcel that to be built on, but unfortunately right now it cannot have any building take place because of the fact that it's still contaminated. They are rectifying it. The majority of the equipment for the contamination cleanup is located on this parcel. So you can imagine it makes it very hard, one, to market a property with, you know, gigantic state, you know, equipment, we'll just say equipment, but also it has the stigma of the contamination. So to say the least, Mr. Jacobs is having a hard time to sell this property. He can't build on it. He's very limited in what he can do on this parcel. We were faced with a very unique situation. We've worked with him for many years. We've given him the discount that we've deemed through the state which is acceptable. And how we did that was through a discounted cash flow. And I went into that within the packet. However, what we deemed is about rounded at about 25% discount. You know, and believe me, Mr. Jacobs is a very kind man, and he's happy with anything that we provide for him. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to bring it forth to you to see our hands are tied. We've done what we can do. Maybe if there's something, if you come to a different conclusion.
Okay, great. Comments, questions?
Member Rasner, asking a question to the assessor. When do they expect this to be cleaned up? 2019, is that what I see?
Yes, that's a great estimate. Yeah, that's what they're estimating. So this discount would only apply until the remediation is complete, and then the value would then be placed back on the parcel once it becomes deemed that it is no longer contaminated and can be built upon.
Okay. And another question, I noticed that did he foreclose on this property? Was it his at one point?
Yes, he. I believe it was to the parcel next door, and he had to he was the doing an owner carry, and he had to foreclose on this parcel. So he's already incurred some loss.
Thank you.
Basically, what we're up against is you've done the best that you can, required allowed by law, to lower the total taxable value to $187,354 at minimum, and the appellant is basically saying the property is worth between $120,000 and $150,000. So what we need to do here is the board make a determination whether we're going to stick with what the assessor's been doing, what they're allowed to, or are we going to reduce it any farther?
Correct. Dave would like me to add that he is marketing the property at $209,000. It's been on the market for quite some time, but he, you know, that is an indicator of what he believes the value of the parcel to be.
So he's hopeful. All right, seeing no comments or questions, I'd like to entertain a motion. Mallory, you got a comment, question?
I've got some math. If we were to, just looking at these comps, I'm looking at this 3922 Highway 50 East comp at 474 a foot. I'm just bringing a suggestion to the board. But if we were to lower the value for the subject property to $5 a foot, that would take it to $172,280. And then applying that 25% discount would take us down to $129,210. I mean, I think that might be kind of low. I'm just kind of looking at options of what we could do as far as reducing the value and then taking that discount on top of it.
You know, I wouldn't be opposed to just lowering the total taxable value from $187,354 down to, based on your figures, Mallory, to $172,280,000. Okay, with that being said, I'd like to entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, could you just elaborate what you're basing that on, just for the record, in case they appeal this, so that it's not...
Based on Mallory's comments, I also took a value of what the total taxable value of $187,354 plus $150,000, which he seems to think is on the high end, and I divided it by two, and so I thought $168,677 might be a decent compromise, and I just came up with $170,000 in my mind. Before I even came to this meeting, and with Mallory coming up with a value of 172,280, that's where I came up with that value.
And that value, 172,280, is based on a price per square foot of $5, which is backed up by the comps. I mean, it's based mostly on this 3922 Highway 50 East, but then we wouldn't take a discount thereafter. It would just be $5 a foot.
Thank you. I have a question. So they said that it's going to be contaminated until 2019. Should we have this stay until it's not contaminated?
It would be year by year. But our intent is absolutely, is once the issue is not in place, the discount will not stay in place either.
Well, what I'm thinking is maybe to prevent that, or to take care of what Carson's talking about, we could come up with a land value that after a 25% discount gets us to that 170 figure, so that when that discount is removed, it's equalized. Is that?
So, with that said, would you like to make a stab at a motion?
Denise, can I ask a question to you? The other properties that are affected by this, are they getting any type of discount?
The parcel next door does receive a discount. The reason why we're bringing this one to you in particular is because of the fact that it's vacant. And all the other parcels have been able to continue their businesses. They're able to derive income from these parcels even through the remediation of the contamination, where Mr. Jacobs' parcel, it's vacant and he's not allowed to build on it, and it's not going to be sold for development. Possibly, I'm just making an assumption with the stigma.
The only reason he built the fence on that property was that people were using that as a cut-through to go to Janelle Avenue, and that's why he put the chain-link fence up to stop the traffic from driving across his property.
Okay, so if we went with a valuation of $6.50 a square foot, then that would take his taxable value his taxable value to $223,964, and then if we apply that 25% discount, that takes us down to $167,973. So then once that discount is removed in 2019, he's back up to that $223,964. What do you guys think?
Okay. I think that would be increasing then decreasing, and I don't know that we can do that. We can't increase.
Well, for this year, his total taxable value would be $167,973 after that discount. Is that something that we can, or is that?
It's the process. I think it's the process getting to it. And I wonder if.
So can we do it at a higher, at the same value, and then apply the discount? I mean, it's.
I'm just trying to come up with a way to get a value, and then with the discount, so we can
absolutely
take it off.
Absolutely. No, I see exactly what you're trying to do. Is that? Am I correct in saying that it's the process of going up and then going down? Is
right.
that what's...
Dave, Dolly, the land value itself is $216,986, so we can't go above that without noticing them that we're going to raise the value above that, and we didn't do that. I'm sorry, page 34, the land value is $216,986. And we have an improvement of $851 for a total of $217,837.
And we're only discounting the land, right?
Correct.
So I feel like I must be missing something. I don't know, but with that 25% discount applied to the land value, and then with the $851 of improvements added back in, I'm coming up with a total value of $163,590 after that discount? Am I like?
That's what I get, $163,590.
And so.
That's with the discount.
Yeah. Good call. Our sheet must be incorrect.
So what it should be is instead of 187, it's 163 as far as the total taxable value?
Correct. If you take the 217, and let me just verify real quick, please. Okay, I apologize, Dave Dolly. So currently the land is on at $216,986. If you were to give it 25% discount, it would take it down to $162,739. And then you would add the $851 on top of it for a total of $163,590. So our recommendation is to lower it to $163,590.
Okay, so I'm assuming we need a motion to this. For this to apply the 25% discount? Is that okay? All right, so I move to apply a 25% discount to the taxable land value of APN number 00103204 to bring the total taxable value to $163,590.50. Oh, does it round? So I'm going to amend that to say $163,591.
Can we make a clarification real quick?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm looking at this, and it appears as though what happened was the discount was taken off the price per square foot for market value, and that's where the difference in the number is. So the math is not going to come out right because it was a discount on the price per square foot for the market value of the land. But either way, you want to do that. But I just wanted to clarify, it's not a mistake within the packet that it was the, we just did the math, our initial numbers were different.
And then the original. And then the original 15%, because we did give it 15% to begin with, was based on the $7.25 a foot?
Well, the $7.25 is the market value price per square foot. So that's your initial number. That's your starting point. And then what had happened is the $216,986 already includes the 15% discount. That's why my numbers are much higher than your numbers are because I did not, because if not, if we add on additional, you're
actually giving it.
Giving it more than it, then, I mean, you feel free. I mean, you do whatever you need. I know, not Dave. Dave was like, don't, yeah, no. But that's why our numbers differ is because I went from a very starting point and gave it the 25% discount. And then if you wanted to do, well, in my recommendation, it's the 25, but the 216,986 is that original number minus the 15. So that's just to get clarification, so we don't give more than what we're thinking.
And I apologize for that error. I forgot that the original 15% was already taken out, so that's my error. I apologize.
So do we have the original number before the 15% discount? The reason we can't calculate it without.
It would be the square footage of the parcel times $7.25. It should be in here somewhere, though.
Mm-hmm. So if we were to do a 30% discount, that would take the land value to $174,864. And I feel like a 30% discount is pretty deep. That's just for the land value, then we'd add back in that $851 for improvements. Yeah, because I had miscalculated because I was taking the discount off of the already discounted number. But when I use that 725, and then even if we were to do a 30% discount at that point, that only takes that land value to 174. But that seems like a pretty deep discount.
Okay, with that said,
Okay, so Dave Dolly. So when you take the 725 per foot times the square footage of the parcel, which is 34,456, you get 249,806. So if you take the reduction of 30%, which a reduction is 74,942, that's going to get you down to 174,865, not including any improvements.
Okay. So I'm prepared to make a motion, and then we can kind of go from there.
Okay, let's just call it, you're going to amend your motion.
That's right. Okay, so do I have to amend the motion, or can I make a new one?
Well, since there's a motion on the table, do I have a second? Seeing no second, motion fails. Okay. New motion.
Okay, so I move to apply a 30% discount to the land value of parcel 001-032-04, bringing the discounted land value to $174,865 and the total taxable value to $175,716.
Second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Now on to item I for possible action, approval of value request for Carson Tahoe Hospital, APN 007-531-15 Medical Parkway, Carson Tahoe Hospital, APN 007-531-16 at 1475 Vista Lane, Carson Tahoe Hospital, APN 007-531-17 at 1725 Vista Lane, Carson Tahoe Hospital, APN 007-531-32, Silver Oak Drive. Carson Tahoe Hospital, APN 007-531-41, Medical Parkway. Almarez, Michael G. and Michelle M., APN 007-531-18 at 1675 Vista Lane. Vista Lane, LLC, APN 007-531-19 at 1625 Vista Lane. R&S Partners, LP and Vanderbeek, Ronald and Camille Trust, APN 007-531-20 at 1525 Vista Lane, Urologic Properties, LLC, at APN 007-531-21 at 1425 Vista Lane, GIC Properties, / Carson City, APN 007-531-22 at 1485 Vista Lane, Campus LLC, APN 007-531-23 at 1375 Vista Lane, and JNC Properties, LLC, APN 007-531-30, located at 1505 Medical Parkway. Mr. Assessor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave Dolly, Carson City Assessor. I'm going to take the fun out of all of this for my staff. So, if you might recall, we had an appeal on the Sheldrew property, which was located up there, and we mentioned to you at the time that the properties when we actually looked at the value, we're actually a little over market value. So we did notice all of these property owners and let them know that the values were going to be heard, and we are requesting a value change. At the hearing, it was determined that $575,000 per acre was a good number for up there, and that actually translates to $13.20 a foot. And so we would like to lower all of these values down to $575,000 per acre, or $13.20 per foot, as read into the record by the chairman.
Okay, great. Any questions? I'd like to entertain a motion.
I would like to move the motion to reduce. One second, sorry. Reduce all of the taxable valuations from, do I have to give the amount of each one?
No, just as read into the record.
Okay. Reduce it to $575,000 per acre. For 2017 and 2018.
Let's for clarification point, why don't I go ahead and read the parcel number and the proposed land value changes, what we want to change them to, if that's okay with you. Okay. Parcel number 007-531-15, proposed land value change to $919,987. Parcel number 007-531-16, proposed land value change to $269,478. Parcel number 007-531-17, proposed change land value is $875,226. Parcel number 007-531-18, proposed change land value to $359,489. Parcel number 007-531-19, proposed change land value to $456,456. Wow, that's, I love that number. Parcel number 007-531-20, proposed change land value to $542,084. Parcel number 007-531-21, proposed change land value to $442,886. Parcel number 007-531-22, proposed change land value to $887,040. Parcel number 007-531-23, proposed change land value to $342,962. Parcel number 007-531-30, proposed change land value to $820,512. Parcel number 007-531-32, proposed change land value to $674,203. Parcel number 007-531-41, proposed change land value to $816,024.
Okay, we have a motion with the information provided by the assessor for clarification. So we have the motion with all that information. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Hearing any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Now on to Krasner. Who seconded it? Okay. Cool. And now on to, if I can get through this paper mill. Public comment, item J. The public is invited at this time to comment on any matter that is not specifically included on the agenda as an action item. No action may be taken on a matter raised under this item of the agenda. Seeing no public.
Okay.
Now we have public, who also is the assessor. So,
Mr. Chairman, this actually concludes all of our meetings. We won't be holding anymore. But I want to take this time to thank you again. I mean, we had some difficult appeals this year. And honestly, that's why we bring them here, because we want guidance from you guys. If we know, if you can tell us, if you think of things that we can do in order to make your job easier, please let us know. We will do anything we can. Member McFadden, you did an awesome job as your first year, so thank you very much for joining us. And again, for all of the board members, we really, truly appreciate the amount of time that it takes to go through all of the information that we have, and the fact that, you know, we give it to you on a Thursday and you have to spend your weekend doing it. You know, you will not know how much we appreciate the fact that you come up here and you assist us and you assist the residents of Carson City to make sure that everything is being equalized. So thank you very much for your time. We greatly appreciate it.
Well, I'll make a follow-up comment. I'm really proud of the board this year, because everybody's done their due diligence. It's evident that everybody's read the material. And when you get 500 pages on Thursday that you have to go through, and you get another, 50 or 60 on Monday afternoon, I mean, it's really, it takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of time. And so I do appreciate that, because as we saw, I think some of us were more prepared than the appellants. And so great job, and we'll probably see you all next year.
I think the board, the assessor's office, does an excellent job preparing our books for us, so that we have somewhere to start.
Well, if you think about the time that we put in it, you know, there's probably 10 times at least that amount put into it, and just bringing the books to us, bringing the thumb drives, setting up the computers, and all the stuff, because we see the tip of the iceberg. We don't see these people coming and talking to you day after day after day and arguing and whatever goes on. So, yeah, it's greatly appreciated. So With that said, if there's no other further comments.
I make a motion that we adjourn until next year.
I have a motion. Do we have a second?
I second that.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Have a great day.